vanguard of liberty, ye men of Kent, ye children of a soil that doth advance her haughty brow against the coast of France. Now is the time to prove your hardiment. To France be words of invitation sent. They from their fields can see the countenance of your fierce war. May ken the glittering lance and hear you shouting forth your brave intent. Left single, in bold parley, ye of yore did from the Norman win a gallant wreath, confirmed the charters that were yours before. No parleying now. In Britain is one breath. We are all with you now from shore to shore, ye men of Kent. 'Tis victory or death.
Victory or death? I mean, good thing I'm not a man of Kent. I'd rather have breakfast.
Oh, Izzy, you're ruining the moment.
I'm really hungry.
Look, come on, this is our great farewell. Our goodbye from this sceptred isle. I think it needs a little bit more decorum, don't you?
A little bit more decorum in a greasy spoon. I would think so. And feel free to feast on victory or death. I'll go for some scrambled eggs.
Oh, scrambled eggs. This is bold blasphemy, incredible indecency, and in fact, it is stunning sacrilege.
Oh, come on now. No parleying now, as Wordsworth would say. Let's get some food.
Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod. My name is Izzy.
And I'm Orlando.
And we're two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Right. Who love poetry, and we want to share that love.
With you.
In our first season, we'll be looking at British culture through the lens of poetry. Welcome to the Poetry Pod. Season 1, Written Through the Bards.
Do you want some sausages?
No, I'll just have bacon, scrambled egg, fried bread and tomato.
Really?
Yeah.
No black pudding?
Oh, definitely not, no.
No black pudding?
No.
Not even baked beans?
Especially not baked beans. I mean, think of our journey.
Yeah, okay, but it might make it actually go quicker, right? Okay. Hello. One great British breakfast extra light. And I will have a full Monty, please, and a large pot of tea.
A full Monty?
Yeah, you know, the works, everything. This is my last meal before the ferry, so I'm going to try and ingest as much Britishness as possible.
Oh, you sound like a condemned man. I mean, is that healthy, the amount of meat and fat? Actually, I think you're not allowed to take meat products over the border, you know, new Brexit customs directive.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, but the meat products are going to be inside me, won't they?
Yeah, nice image. But I think it's still tantamount to smuggling, so.
What, are you saying that if I eat 3 sausages, that's the same legally as swallowing a condom filled with cocaine, or what?
God, could you stop? Can we change the subject? I'm rapidly losing my appetite.
You started it. I'm beginning to wish I ordered the muesli.
They've got muesli. What didn't you say?
Don't go all German on me now. It's probably served with a side order of baked beans anyway. We'll be back home soon enough, don't worry. Then you can roll around to your heart's content in oats, nuts and raisins.
To be fair, I'm pretty worried about your heart's content because it's I don't think that's going to happen after your full Monty.
Probably not, no.
No, I think I might prefer a nice bowl of salted porridge.
Salted porridge, that's very Scottish of you. Actually, you should get talking to those chaps who were distributing leaflets outside. I think they were Scottish as well, judging by their accents.
Right, yeah, I took one of their pamphlets. It says, "Petition to let European ghosts in Dover Castle keep their citizenship."
It sounds like a real niche market.
It does,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting, but a niche market nonetheless, yeah.
Yeah.
So hang on. Ghosts, are we saying that ghosts are not allowed to keep their citizenship? Their
I mean,
European
imagine if they're, probably if they're Norman ghosts, that means they're from France originally.
I
so
see.
Then
so
they
they'd
might
have to return,
lose,
would they?
They'd have to return, yeah.
But I mean,
return,
if you're
France would send some pensioners back.
Okay, yes.
Maybe those can live in Dover Castle. Maybe that would be
a trade. It's an interesting image, isn't it? But hang on, ghosts surely are free to flit across the channel, are they not?
I mean, true. You'd think so.
Are they bound by supernatural customs rules, do you think?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Brexit could do that. There's probably a Brexit clause somewhere that says, like, any person dead or alive cannot keep their British citizenship.
Really? It wouldn't surprise me. There's probably some sort of small print, paragraph C/13.
It would definitely be a sort of very rich, source for literary endeavours, I'd imagine.
Certainly would. Well, maybe that's exactly what these people are doing. Yeah. I mean, Brexit, it is such an unbelievable thing that we're even talking about it, that it even happened, right? Could you have imagined that 5 or 6 years ago?
No, definitely not.
When were you studying in the UK?
2015, 2016.
So just as this debate was getting going, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And in fact, when the referendum happened.
Yeah, I think that was 2016.
2016.
Right? Yeah.
So just as you were leaving, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
That really is
unbelievable. You know, it's interesting because obviously we're here in a poetic sense. There was a huge outpouring poetically about Brexit. In fact, there's a group of people called the Brexit Poets.
Oh, God.
They designate themselves as Brexit Poets. And the funny thing is that all of these UK Independence Party people, they actually had a real go at the poet laureate, Simon Armitage, because he didn't write or didn't want to write a Brexit poem.
Right. I mean, even though, well, I guess it is his job to write about important political events.
That's exactly what the poet laureate's there for, really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's quite interesting because, he didn't want to do it. But the reason that he didn't want to do it is because he was writing some sort of very long film poem. But more of that in a minute. I mean, but there are a lot of politicians, unfortunately, I say, who then thought, okay, if the poet laureate's not going to do it, we are going to have to respond poetically.
That's always a bad idea. Politicians going, well, the expert's not going to do it, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And has led to an outpouring of well, we could start a new sort of section of our show called the shit poetry section. How about that?
Absolutely. This, oh, here comes our food.
Oh, that's very nice. The shit poetry section would be filled with the kind of poems I'm about to read to you now, which are very, very short. And, so here we are. There's one guy, Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's the leader of the House of Commons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Right off him. He's the one with the...
You eat away. Yeah. Eat away. Your food has arrived. I don't know why mine is taking longer to cook. I'm getting four
more
sausages.
More on yours, yeah.
And he has written... I don't know what you can describe it as. Is it a limerick? I'm not sure, but I'll read it to you. The poet laureate used to be paid in sherry, which made him decidedly merry. Now he is paid in hard cash, which makes him awfully slapdash. But when it comes to Brexit, he needn't be wary. I inflected the last line because it has a question mark at the end.
Ooh, yeah.
What do you make of that? It sort of combines a lot of different poetic directions.
It sounds like it's supposed to be a limerick, but then also written by someone who can't really count syllables.
Yeah, exactly. So he decided at school, I can't count syllables. I know, I'll become a politician.
Yeah. Also, slapdash.
Slapdash.
Pronouncing it in a sort of French way, slapdash.
Yeah, I just added a European touch. I had to put it at that because otherwise it doesn't scan at all.
Exactly, yeah.
His sister, mm-hmm. Who is a member of the UK Independence Party, called, ironically, Annunciata.
Typical British name.
Typical British name, typically British for someone who actually wants to leave the EU.
Absolutely.
She thought, no, I can't let my brother, write that sort of trash. So she wrote an improved version, it has to be said, but on a similar theme. I'll read it to you. The British voted for Brexit. Remainers attempted to wreck it. But leavers fought on, so soon we'll be gone. As we thrive on outside, will they get it?
Mm.
I inflected again, because again there's a question mark.
Yeah.
Maybe she took his poem and thought, how can I improve it? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think from a, strictly metric point of view, that one's greatly improved.
It's certainly better, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely.
She probably got better marks in English, in English literature than he did, I suspect. Yeah. But I've saved the best till last, right? The MEP, Member of the European Parliament, Lance Foreman, he tried to go one better. And he wrote, October the 31st is when we burst out of the EU's grip. No ifs, no buts, no backstop cuts. We leave the sinking ship. So just poetically, it's better, isn't
it? Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's got this nice sort of, you know, forward movement.
He can count syllables for a start, can't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, definitely. Even though I disagree with the use of the word burst, because Brexit was really a bursting process. It was more a very slow wriggle.
Yeah, wriggling backwards and forwards.
Yeah, very slow and painful wriggle.
Very,
but that
very
wouldn't
painful,
fit into the metre here.
Not really, no. I mean, he'd have to write a long poem. Yeah, speaking of a long poem, have you seen... So the poet laureate, Simon Armitage, he wrote this long poem in film form called The Brink. And, have you seen it?
Yeah. I watched it on the train here because you wouldn't shut up about it. So
I
figured
know.
I'd have to watch it.
I made you watch it.
Because you'd keep nagging me. But yeah, it is really cool. It is very nice sort of... It seems like a very, in a way, neutral take. Because he's describing things that he sees, which, you know, obviously you can't have neutral poems. But it's sort of trying to... Yeah, be an outside look on the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. And he does try to stay... I don't know whether he stays impartial. He represents a lot of different views. And I think, if I'm right, he sort of says it's an impressionistic kind of a view. So it represents this kind of very hazy view and relationship that the Brits have with Europe, continental Europe. Sort of half one leg in and one leg out sort of feeling. And it's a nebulous. And I think he gets that across very well. And you know what? I've got a little surprise for us, given that it's our last episode of our first series. Simon Armitage, the poet laureate himself, because we've talked about poet laureates, haven't we? We've talked about John Masefield, we talked about Tennyson.
Yeah.
Well, the current poet laureate has given us special permission.
Ooh.
You and me, yeah? He's given us special permission to read parts of The Brink.
Fantastic. That's really cool.
So I'm gonna quote the first, and I thought I'd just take three short excerpts because he talks a lot about Kent. And, so this is the first excerpt. Kent, dipping its toe in the brine, showing a clean pair of heels to the east. Kent. Kent, Garden of England, England's exhaust pipe. Kent, bearing its broken white gnashes, growling at Gaul. Famous British orthodontia, bearing its all. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, especially if sort of, you know, if you look at the white cliffs, they do look like teeth.
They look like teeth, don't they? It's a lovely image. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And here comes my great British breakfast, my full Monty. Look at the size of it.
Oh, wow.
Four
that
sausages,
really
the blackest pudding this side of the channel. I am, hang on a sec, I'm going to drown it in HP sauce.
That does look good.
It is. All part of the ritual, isn't it?
Yeah. Ah,
nothing like a good greasy spoon to finish off our British Odyssey.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Odyssey, the words odd and sea, pretty much sum up our trip, right? I mean, really hope Jessica didn't get arrested, you know, last time.
Well,
for the lunch.
To be honest, it would have served her right for saying she had nothing to do with us. Mm. She seemed like such a nice person. Just goes to show, doesn't it?
No, she is a nice person, but we sort of put her in a difficult position with a stolen lunchbox, but...
Well, you did.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of food, what is a greasy spoon? Where does that name come from?
A greasy spoon, well, okay. I'll try and keep it short, because I know how you like short explanations. Go on, greasy spoons. Gosh, this is really tasty, actually. I'm glad I didn't order the salted porridge. Greasy spoons originated in America, amazingly enough. But Izzy, before you start, no American poems.
I do have one in my pocket, but...
I'll quote to you. A greasy spoon originally is a small, cheap eatery specializing in fried foods or home-cooked meals. But it has even earlier literary connections. So do you remember from the second episode, do you remember Robert Louis Stevenson?
Mm-hmm.
because I think we read out at least two of his poems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A Scottish mate. Well, he lived in Paris for a while, not surprisingly. And he used to go to a joint called La Crèmerie, a place much frequented by artists and familiarly known as the Greasy Spoon. Mm-hmm. So that, and that is a quote from 1874. So I think we are in good company.
Well, maybe not in this particular Greasy Spoon. There doesn't seem to be a collection of artists here.
No, it doesn't look like it, does it? No. But having said that, what about these guys outside we saw? I think they were Scottish, weren't they? And I think they were artistic. They had big scarves and long hair. Yeah, am I being too stereotypical?
No, I think...
Look, they're coming in. They must have heard us talking about Robert Louis Stevenson.
Hey, can I get a large pot of tea, please?
One. No salted porridge, no kippers.
Orlando, don't be so stereotypical.
And some salted porridge and kippers, please.
You see?
Oh, hi. Good morning. Have you had a chance to read our pamphlet yet?
Yeah, we've had a quick look at it. So, you two are clearly very interested in ghosts and the supernatural. So, what's your fascination with those?
Glasgow is a very spooky city, and we are very spooky people. The whole fascination with the supernatural, I think, definitely comes from if you ever grow up and you feel slightly sort of strange, or you feel like you slightly don't fit in your environment or, you know, your surroundings, then tales about, you know, ghosts and beings that shouldn't be, and, you know, things that are where they're not supposed to be, and they're very appealing. I know when, you know, I was a kid and studying English literature and all that sort of stuff, all the Gothic stuff really appealed to me, and that definitely set the ball rolling for, you know, the kind of stuff that we wanted to create as adults. I don't know about you, Ross, but that's partly how I got into it.
Yeah, I grew up very much on kind of 80s horror, and then into like slashers, and I loved films. I grew up on film, and then kind of getting into performance and stuff. I always wanted to do horror stuff. Then I met Sid on stage as an exorcist. And so that's how we ended up working on some more spooky projects together.
Cool. So you mentioned Glasgow. So would you say that features in your work a lot? Just the city, the atmosphere in the city, the spookiness of the city?
The city itself has a very specific character in that it feels quite anarchic in some ways. It feels quite, it wants to be different politically, socially minded, like everything like that. And it really makes sense in a supernatural context. It's another one of those kind of a cliche, but it feels like one of those places where the veil is quite thin, where, you know, strange things could happen if the right energy popped up.
Like Scottish independence, for example.
We can only hope.
Fingers crossed.
So, Ross, you mentioned projects that you've been working on. What's sort of your main project at the moment?
So, we've been, for the last several years now, working on an audio drama called Folklore. It's a queer horror podcast audio drama where we tell a selection of stories centered around queer people and the supernatural, scary and spooky, all based in Glasgow.
So what made you go for the sort of audio drama format?
The initial idea was kind of early 2018. I run a small kind of theatre company based around spoken word and poetry with Bibi June and Ellen Renton. We've done a lot of theatre shows, but our main thing is trying to kind of diversify where you can find performance poetry, specifically kind of the Glaswegian performance poetry that we grew up on. And one of the concepts that I kind of came up quite early on in the business was, what if we did radio plays and pitched them to the BBC? And then so I applied for some funding to do the pilots. We didn't quite know what they would look like at that point. And when we got the funding through to make the pilots, we contacted Sid, Dev contacted us, and we ended up kind of writing folklore.
Yeah, I came to it very much as a podcast fan and somebody who's, you know, been very into podcasts for a long time, and especially kind of indie, like queer shows, like the Penumbra podcast is a great example, where they do things similar to us, where, you know, voice actors are not cast according to gender and, you know, all this sort of thing. Like there's various kind of influences that come into it. But yeah, in terms of kind of poetry and performance.
Could we hear some of your recordings for the Folklore podcast? I'd be really interested in, you know, checking out the work you do.
Well, conveniently, we do have a clip for you.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, super. Let's listen.
A feeling of this force cannot be wrong. Must be rooted in God's grace or the very earth itself for the relentlessness with which it torments me. I know you share this affliction, Robert, and your conscience is a sly thing indeed to try and tear you from me to save you the sleepless nights. Our love may not walk in the light of day, but then perhaps that is why we have come together here below the sod and prying eyes which would rather see us hanged than happy. We may feel eyes on us in the tunnel, dear, but it is merely paranoid fantasy prickling at our necks when we have the chance to be alone at last. We must not let such idle fears claw us apart. There are many corporeal forces ready and waiting to do so. Do not assist them by allowing a childish fear of what lurks in the dark to take you from my arms. Come below early on Monday, and I will take your hand and prove the hidden world is our friend, not foe. Until then, my love, Jay.
Found today. Letter. I've been more careful since the caretaker caught me, worried he might have said something to the residents or the famous bloody landlord. The combination of that fucking pocket watch's relentless ticking and the nerve-shredding rumble of his voice means I haven't been sleeping anyway. So I went in at night this time. I slipped in behind the Uber Eats driver with the blonde ponytail I've seen come in and out regularly since I began watching.
That was fantastic. That was, wow. Certainly something I've never heard before.
Definitely, yeah. It's a really interesting format, I think, that you've chosen. So, I mean, obviously your petitions for stateless ghosts are a lot of fun, but what you feel are the sort of serious issues that need to be dealt with in this day and age?
Well, I mean, just diving in on the back of what folklore is, you know, I'm a trans person in the UK, and that's a not particularly comfortable experience at the moment. You know, a lot of the narrative around trans existence in the UK is very much what it was for gay people in the 80s. We're a very convenient scapegoat for a lot of things at the moment, and there's a particularly sort of nasty streak in Scottish politics that's becoming very overtly and very violently transphobic. And it's very inconvenient that it's such a massive issue, because we're a very, very tiny sliver of the population. So I don't understand why it's necessary to focus this much attention on us in that way. But yeah, just, you know, there are obviously bigger issues going on in Scotland at the moment, but in terms of, you know, folklore and what we personally deal with, that's a kind of big concern and a big sort of thing that we try and do with the podcast, is try and give a voice to, you know, the other side of that quote unquote debate, as much as you can debate, you know, someone's existence.
We Izzy and I are on the basically right at the end of our pan UK voyage, which, if you can call it that, we haven't made it out of England, so we've not been to Wales, we've not been to Ireland, we've not been to Scotland. So it's kind of ironic that in Dover we should bump into you two. What do you feel about the Scots leaving the United Kingdom? Is that likely to happen, do you think? And B, how will that affect you?
Personally, it seems like, on the face of it, a good thing. I'm not impressed by the idea that Scotland has like a fundamentally different politic than England, especially given like what Sid was just talking about there. Like, there are some really nasty aspects to Scottish politics, and it is systematic. It's not just a few bad people. There are some pretty bad stuff going on in Scotland. So Scottish independence, while it's something that I think I at least support. I think Sid supports.
Yep.
And it's the beginning of work that needs to be done. It just seems like the English system needs a shock. It needs the proof that another kind of politic is possible. In England, there has been a lie fed in that Scotland gets funded by the rest of the UK. And that's why it's able to have free tuition and free medication and all of these things. And it'd just be great for Scotland to get away for a bit and prove that, no, we've been doing this on our own with our own money for quite a long time. And as well, the fact that we would get to go back into Europe after being told the only way to stay in Europe was to stay in the United Kingdom pre the 2014 Scottish independence referendum.
We'd be very happy, wouldn't we, Izzy? We'd be very happy to welcome you into the folds of the EU.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, we would love to return. And I mean, anything that gets you further away from being beholden to Boris Johnson must be a good thing at the end of the day.
Very true. So obviously politics feature heavily in your folklore podcast and probably also in your poetry, I imagine. So would you say poetry has the ability to change politics, society, the real world, so to speak?
I think what poetry does and what all sort of performance art does is allow people to state their case, allow people to have a voice where they otherwise wouldn't, and make things palatable for audiences in a way that just simply standing up and screaming about your views doesn't necessarily. I mean, most of my poetry involves standing up and screaming about my views, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But it you know, makes people who wouldn't otherwise consider these things have that light bulb go off and go, oh, those people are like me. Those people have feelings the same way that I do, you know, on a very basic level. I would say it's a hearts and minds thing rather than active influencing policy kind of thing.
So, Sid, I'd actually love to hear you stand up and shout some poetry. Would you happen to have a poem that you could do for us?
I do. I have a poem called No Gods, No Masters, which should tell you everything you need to know.
The view around the conference room is Glasgow injured. The cold breeze never leaves even when the sky is blue. The sun's just been cloud covered and we're waking up. 10 o'clock meets. Monday morning feelings. Oh, how was your weekend? How's the week ahead looking the usual? Sisyphean? A melting pot of life experience with no rhyme or reason. We answer honestly in hopes of being seen, but each of us is dealing by our own honed means. So what's the chance of getting help staying afloat when you're not rowing from the same boat? Danny came to this country to be with her wife. With no backup, no savings and no return flight, she better hope that her marriage works out alright. With no support network left to pick up her life, Alex counts her contracts in a matter of days. Alarm bells ringing inside her brain, but if you don't have security, you can't feel safe. Murphy's pushing 30, but feeling old with life, won't get home tonight because overtime is paying forward Christmas. And dinner with his kids is the only thing that's on his wish list. Office party on a Thursday? Yeah, probably shouldn't risk it. Credit cards behind the bars is just a recipe for mischief. It's the way they pay us back for all the real life that we're missing. That and biscuits in the kitchen. Free coffee for the mornings when your eyelids won't stop twitching for all the sleep that you've been skipping while you're eking out to live in. He ain't Jesus, not a Christian, but he's pleading for attrition for every meeting he has to sit in. He loves what he does, but this is too much. Every tail around this table, needlessly chased, 50 hours on the late shift. Leisure seconds basic, it's just difficult to take it. When your house is built on playing cards, your life's not what you make it. It's the definition of makeshift. But before you know it, it's lunch. Mornings are rough. But we swing through on what's new in everybody's shared energy. It's always that way on a Monday. By the time that five arrives, you feel like you're off early. And thank God for small mercies.
And what about you, Ross? Would you say that, you know, in your work outside the podcast, you write about a lot of political stuff?
I must say I'm not the most political person on stage. I think I got up on my first gig ever as a performance poet, just doing exclusively performance poetry as opposed to poetry and storytelling, and I did a bunch of political poems. And I got off stage and I decided I'm never going to do that again because no one in this room needs to hear me specifically talk about anything overtly political. There's just no need for it. So that was about 8 years ago and I've never written an overtly political poem since. Instead, I do write things that are designed to offer a different view on life and politics.
There are no kings here. No gods, no masters. Only us. Say it with me now. Say it aloud. This is it. This is not exclusive. This is not members only. This is not a boys' club. This is not a guest list or names on the door. This is not your band if you're wearing trainers or colours or a dress or nothing. This is not a debate. This is not taking no for an answer. This is not your regime. This is not your party politics or your petty divisions. This is not your flag. This is not your old alliances. This is not running away. This is not backing down. This is not being afraid to fuck up and laugh about it. This is not glitz and this is not glamour. This is not standing in the corner posing and waiting for someone to notice you. This is not a filtered version of reality. This is not plastic. This is not fake. This is not your teenage concept of real. Man, this is not London. This is not New York. This is fucking Glasgow. And this is us. No gods, no masters, just us. This is a statement of intent. This is dedicated to everyone who called us queer or freak or weird because of who we are, and this is the big fat middle finger they can spin on. This is standing up to be counted. This is I am a faggot with a capital F and I like it. This is demanding the world we know we deserve. This is naked abandon, an abandoned ship. This is a freak show. This is a church. This is pageantry. This is punk fucking rock. This is walking up to the edge of the cliff and taking a swan dive onto the rocks because it looks like fun. This is being heard. This is not letting ourselves be stomped on by bigger boys in bigger boots. This is not being grateful for scraps. This is not staying quiet and not causing a scene. This is your clenched fist and mine side by side. This is community. This is us. No gods, no masters, just us. This is not pay to play. This is not fit in to win. This is not backhand slaps and hand scratch backs. This is not only cheering for your mates. This is not showing up when it's your turn to read and fucking off afterwards. This is not taking and taking and giving nothing back. This is not a gig. We're Joy Division and you're the crowd. Good night. God bless. This is not hierarchy. This is not a division of labor. This is not showing you how it's done. This is not a lecture. This is not being afraid to be shite and be told you're shite and tell someone else they're shite at the end of the night. This is not disguising the fact that sometimes you pretend like you're someone who can cope just to get up here. This is not pretending you're not always nervous because you fucking are. This is scooping up broken glass with bare hands and a smile. This is being in this together. This is us. No gods, no masters, just us.
Can I just ask, We're in this greasy spoon for the first time in Dover, you probably as well. How is the salted porridge and how are the kippers? Do they stand up to the Glasgow standards?
No, they live up to all our expectations, which are on the floor. So,
right, I think we'll probably have to let you get on with your pamphleting because, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that need to hear about, you know, stateless ghosts in Dover Castle, which is...
Hey, ghost rights, man, ghost rights.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us, and good luck.
Great, lovely. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, good luck with your pamphleteering, and, yeah, we'll probably see you outside in a few minutes. Well, that was really interesting.
Yeah, it went into a lot more depth than I expected with, you know,
certainly
stateless
did.
Ghosts.
Yeah, stateless ghosts. I feel a bit like a stateless ghost myself. But not anymore, because I am now replete. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Not sure I'm capable of movement, though. What shall we do?
Yeah, I mean, we could go visit Dover, but, you know, the ferry leaves soon, and I really want to do a duty-free shop.
You want to do a duty-free shop? You sure?
Yeah.
What are you going to have? 1,000 cigarettes, 20 bottles of vodka?
Obviously. No, I was thinking more like sausage rolls, maybe. And
of course. Sausage rolls, some more sausage rolls.
Yeah, and some, you know, milk chocolate digestives, because you can't get any good ones in Germany. And then Marmite, obviously.
Oh, Marmite,
my brother
really
likes Marmite, so I need to get him some Marmite.
Yeah.
Hot cross buns, oatcakes.
Oatcakes. Yeah, that's a good choice. Good call. Those are all things we can't get in Germany, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Unless Aldi are doing a sort of British week.
Yeah, I mean, British week at Aldi, you still can't get Marmite at Aldi, can you? Oh, it's the food of the gods, Marmite.
I thought honey was the food of the gods.
Well, yes. Before Brexit, it was.
Yeah,
but now it's Marmite.
It's been replaced.
Yeah.
Actually, though, I know we're not going to take a walk through Dover, but should we talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, could do. Yeah, why not? Our listeners might be interested.
Yeah. So, you can actually see Dover Castle from this window.
We can indeed, where all the ghosts are ready to cross the channel.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. What do we know about Dover then, Izzy? What do you know about Dover?
Well, I know the ferry thing.
The ferry thing.
The ferry thing.
That sounds very specific.
It's famous for the ferries.
It's famous for the ferries. You mean over the millennia, yes?
Yes.
Actually, you're not far wrong in some regards. I tell you what, should we go in the direction of a quiz? Because I have done a little bit of research about Dover.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. Where does the word Dover come from? More specifically, what does it mean?
Right. So I'm thinking, right, you know, in French, very often you have the sort of D apostrophe thing, like Jean d'Arc and so on.
Speaking of your namesake, Joan of Arc,
I imagine it's probably the French standing in Calais and pointing across the channel and saying, "Oh, England is Dover there."
That's very nice. Very good. Very good.
That is my linguistic explanation.
I'm tempted to give you a point just for the cracking joke, but no.
It's how?
A, I'm not going to give you a point, and B, it's wrong.
I think
you can have half a point because that was so funny. No, it comes from the Brittonic. Well, in a way, you're half right because it comes from a Brittonic word for water. Brittonic, as in Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a smidgen of French, but it's kind of Celtic, really. It's like Cornish, has sort of remnants of Celtic language in it. And it's the word for water. I can't pronounce it, but it's DWFR, which sounds a little bit like a ferry company.
Yeah.
coming back to what you said. And the river that flows through Dover is the river, what was it called?
Something similar to Dover.
Chance for another half point.
Ooh, is it Dower?
Oh, very good.
Is it?
I'm going to be generous, seeing as it's our last episode, and because we've got a long journey ahead of us where we've got to be together. I'll give you a point. The River Dower, D-O-U-R, which means water, And
because in Canterbury, there's the River Stour, which isn't a river as such.
Stour and Dower. Yeah, maybe they're related somehow.
Yeah.
And in Roman times, it was Portus Dubris, which means fortified port, and I do not mean a strong pudding wine. Yeah, so, I mean, it's been used as a kind of to-and-fro place over the channel for millennia. And, in fact, in 1974, they found bronze axes in the sea, which showed a Bronze Age trade route between England and France. So it's been going a long time. So they were shipping axes back then. They're shipping cigarettes now. And, and then 1992, they discovered a Bronze Age boat.
Ooh.
Yeah, dating back to... Now, okay, here's your next question. Dating back to when?
Oh, no. No.
Going
to embarrass myself.
That's okay. You can feel free to embarrass yourself. I mean, we both have already enough on this show.
That's very true.
I'll give you a point if you can get it in the right millennium. That's very, very generous of me.
It is. I'm going to go for...
I'll give you a clue. You have to specify AD, as in Anno Domini, or BC.
Oh, it's definitely BC.
Okay, you think it's BC?
Yeah.
Interesting. And when? Which millennium?
I'm going to go for, 5,000 years.
Okay, now that would be very interesting. No, it's 1550 BC.
All right.
1550 BC. But still, pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a long, long time. That's 3,500 years ago. Isn't it? Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
If my rudimentary mathematics is correct, are correct.
Probably better than mine, yeah.
Right.
Definitely better than Rees Mogg's with the syllable counting. So.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for that. That's improved my day. It is also one of the sink ports. Now, I'm using the English pronunciation. The English pronounce it. It's actually a French word. It's supposed to be cinq port. And the English say the sink ports.
There's a terrible name for something ship-related.
I agree.
The sink port.
Yeah, exactly. doesn't bode well for the Royal Navy, does it? Next question. What are the sink ports and what was their function?
Well, I mean, I imagine it's probably the five most important ports in the south of the UK. Probably because it's like French name, so it would have importance for the French.
I mean, that's a pretty good answer. I'll give you half a point. It's not exact, but it's pretty good. So the cinq ports, or the cinq ports, are Hastings, New Romney, Hythe, Dover, and Sandwich.
Sandwich.
Yeah, you've just had breakfast. Don't get carried away. Okay, what was the hottest temperature ever recorded in Dover? What was it and when was it?
Ooh.
Chance for 2 points here.
I remember, I think 2 years ago, 2019, my friends in Canterbury, they were just complaining about the heat wave.
Yeah.
And I remember Laurie, the pub owner, posting a picture, and I think it was... 36, 37 degrees.
Yeah, very good. So that 2 years ago, you're saying, so
yeah.
2019, yeah?
Yeah?
You are right. 2019 is exactly correct. Yeah, okay. I'll give you 2 points.
Fantastic.
So you're up to...
That one's for Laurie the pub owner.
That was for Laurie the pub owner. Good for him. You're not allowed to phone a friend. You know that, don't you? It's, so you're up to 3.5 points, Izzy. And the hottest temperature was 35.9 degrees. On the 25th of July, 2019, and a little bit of personal trivia here, I was in Dover on that day.
Oh.
Can you believe it?
Incredible. Is that the reason it was so hot?
Yeah,
exactly. The people of Dover felt the heat.
They felt the heat as soon as I arrived. I was on holiday with my annual pilgrimage to the UK, and as we came off the ferry in Dover, we thought, it'll be cooler here, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Far from it. It was even warmer than it was on the continent.
Oh, no.
It was nearly 36 degrees. So on with the aircon. And but I remember commenting on it. And sure enough, on Wikipedia, I noticed, the source of all my information and trivia, of course, I noticed 25th of July 2019. That sounds familiar. I was there. Izzy, you're doing extremely well. So 3.5 points you've got. I think that probably ends my quiz, but I could say also, it would be unfair, Dover's not the most attractive place, but it has had a lot of money spent on it recently, since 2018. So they've got a new retail area in St. James's, and they've got a revamped promenade and a revamped beachfront, not that we're going to see much of it today.
Mm.
And in 2019, they've got a new pier.
Ooh.
And a new marina.
Cool.
And they've invested, get this, they've invested £330 million.
Oh, wow.
So to improve Dover Museum, Dover Castle, and all of this sort of the local pedestrian areas the marina. And it's very, very impressive,
actually.
Because
I remember when I went there in 2016, I was a bit, underwhelmed by Dover itself. I mean, the castle was great,
yeah.
The cliffs are great, but then Dover itself just... It felt like a bit sort of wobbly, undefined.
Yeah, it's not helped by the fact that as a person travelling through Dover, you don't get to see all of these places. You're kind of funnelled away from the marina. You're funnelled away from the castle.
Yeah.
You can sort of see them, but you can't get to them.
Yeah.
Shame we don't have more time, and shame my stomach isn't a little emptier.
Mm. Speaking of quizzes, I've got a tiny little quiz.
Have you indeed?
It's very short and sweet. Okay. It's just like three little true or false questions. So,
do you give me the point to have another a half point so I can draw level with you if I get them right?
Yeah, I think that should be.
As long as it's fair.
Yeah. All right. So, first question.
Okay, far away.
There was once a land bridge between Dover and Calais.
I thought you were going to start with a limerick.
There once was a land bridge in Dover.
Okay.
Reaching all the way over until it reached Calais. And the French said, hey. But then their friendship was over.
That's very, very good.
There we go.
Very
good. Impromptu.
Impromptu.
Limerick.
First on the show.
All right.
Was that the question?
Exactly. That was my quiz.
Okay.
Make sense of that poem. No, anywho. Now I can't read the question anymore without... All right, so the question is, true or false, there was a land bridge between Dover and Calais, but it was submerged underwater 8,000 years ago.
Okay. True or false?
True or false.
A land bridge 8,000 years ago.
So before the Bronze Age, really?
No, it cannot be true. Cannot be true.
Alas, it is true. During the Ice Age, all the water got sucked up into the glaciers.
I see.
And then the water levels were a lot lower than they used to be.
But can you call that a land bridge, really? Is that a bridge? It's not a bridge. It's just one big piece of ice, isn't it?
No. It was like you could walk from Calais to Dover because the water levels were so low that, you know, kind of... I forfeit a point.
That is a very interesting piece of trivia, I have to say. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Second question, also true or false.
Mm.
The greatest depth in the English Channel is 225 metres or 738 feet.
225 metres. Okay. It's a very specific measurement.
It is very specific.
And that might be a ruse on your part to throw me off. But I could... believe that. That's about a third of a kilometre. It's not that deep, I think, in the channel. I'd go for that. Yes, true.
I have tricked you, indeed.
Oh, no.
It is false. No. It is not quite as deep. It's 172
metres. That's a very unfair trick.
565 feet.
Okay. It'd be funny if you said it was 220 metres.
Yeah, and 220 metres. No, and it's called Heard Deep.
Heard Deep.
Heard Deep.
Okay.
I think it's a very funny name.
And where is it exactly in the channel?
Heard Deep. I think it's more like towards the west.
Towards the west, so somewhere between Southampton and Le Havre or somewhere
probably.
Like that. Probably. Heard Deep, named after Douglas Heard, probably.
Who?
Douglas Heard is an old retired British minister. But we won't go into that.
We won't. Right,
so
question.
I'm doing really well.
I will not
catch your 3.5 points up.
Yeah. Third question. Okay, here's the thing.
Okay.
It is a true or false question, but I'm just going to ask you the question.
Right.
Without the true or false. I'm going to reformulate the question.
Okay.
And if you get it right, you get 3.5 points.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Right?
So it's double or quits, basically.
Yeah.
Or triple or quits.
Yeah.
Go on then.
All right, so what's the world record for swimming through the channel?
In terms of time?
Yeah, in terms of time.
The world record for swimming the channel. Oh, gosh. Are you going to give me any leeway on this?
Yeah, half an hour.
Half an hour?
Yeah. And I can also give you, the time it took the first person. I can give you the time it took Matthew Webb to swim through.
Whose shorts, I believe, are exhibited here in Dover, if I'm not much mistaken.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how long did it take him?
It took him 22 hours.
22 hours, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say that the record now is 8 hours.
Close. It's just under 7 hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a Belgian swimmer.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Broke that record.
Well, there we are. It's all right. You can give me 1 point for that. So
yeah,
I've done this miserably as well. But you win that one. But Dover, so yeah, so we're not going to see much of it, but it is a starting point for a lot of emotions, usually positive emotions.
Yeah, because it usually means you're going on a holiday. It's nice. Actually, speaking of that, I found a poem by John Keats.
Keats?
We haven't had him on the show.
No, we haven't. I'm glad you found him. We couldn't have left the UK without having Keats.
Exactly. And he wrote a poem about, you know, leaving the UK and going travelling.
Perfect.
It's called Happy is England.
Lovely.
Happy is England. I could be content to see no other verdure than its own, to feel no other breezes than are blown through its tall woods with high romances blent. Yet do I sometimes feel a languishment for skies Italian, and an inward groan to sit upon an alp as on a throne, and half forget what world or worldling meant. Happy is England, sweet her artless daughters. Enough their simple loveliness for me, enough their whitest arms in silence clinging. Yet do I often warmly burn to see beauties of deeper glance, and hear their singing, and float with them about the summer water.
Keats, yeah, that's
Keats,
nice.
Yeah. I mean, when I read the poem in the beginning, I thought, like, oh, that's really nice. And then he goes into that sort of odd objectifying women trope.
Yeah, but I like the fact that he writes about, I sometimes feel a languishment for skies Italian, or do we want to sit on top of an Alp?
Exactly, yeah. You know? I think that's a really nice imagery. Like, England is really nice as it is, but then...
Yeah, but it's limiting. And it's an island, of course,
yeah,
isn't it? So people yearn to
get away.
There's a feeling of belonging, but also a feeling of Wanderlust, as you say.
Speaking of Wanderlust and getting away, I think we've got to get going to get to the ferry.
You are right, my God. Time has moved on apace. Let's settle up.
Right. I guess by you mean me.
Yes, you have surmised correctly. But I tell you what, you cover this, and I will buy you some duty-free Marmite.
Ooh, well, and at least 2 jumbo sausage rolls.
Wow, you drive a pretty hard bargain. Okay, all right, it's a deal.
Cool.
Right, well, that's me sorted. I got a copy of The Guardian and a post-breakfast, and I suppose a post-Brexit, banana. Good God, Izzy. How on earth are you going to get that back to Germany?
It's not that much.
It's a huge amount. 4 king-sized sausage rolls. What have you got? 3 vats of Marmite. 10 Cadbury's caramels.
You did offer to pay.
I'd be doing nothing more than signing your death warrant with that amount of food.
Well, says the man who just supersized himself on the greasy spoon.
Excuse me, all food groups were present in that breakfast, in admittedly large quantities, but there we are.
Hold on. What does that sign say over there?
Where?
That one about new customs rules.
Well, what, that one over there?
It says, no puao.
P-O-A-O.
I'm going to call it puao.
Sounds Hawaiian.
Products of animal origin, no dairy products, no confectionery made from unprocessed dairy foods, but that's everything.
So you're not allowed to take those things. Oh, but hang on, there are some exceptions to that rule. If you read the small print underneath, you can take, let's get a bit closer, caviar, powdered infant milk, and olives stuffed with fish.
Why would anyone want to take those?
Well, they're all the rage down our way. Oh, and look, you can take bananas and coconuts. Well, so I'm all right.
Yeah, the typical British staple.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Oh,
it's not
that's
that
really
usual.
Depressing. So I can't take any of these.
It doesn't look like it. I mean, basically, you'd have to eat all of it before getting on the ferry.
Well, that really pisses me off. Right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go on an anti-Brexit protest eat.
That sounds like a bit of a first and a bit of a last as well. Actually, is that wise, Izzy? You just had breakfast.
I mean, I'm going to put the Marmite back, obviously, because that was for my brother anyway. And maybe 5 of the caramels and 1 sausage. But the rest, I'm going to eat it all.
Are you sure?
To show my disdain for Brexit and the new custom rules.
Are you quite sure? I mean, remember, bear in mind, I cannot help you, right? I'm already full of products of animal origin.
Yeah, but I think it's worth it to make a point.
And what is your point? Brexit stinks?
Yes. No, I don't know. But, you know, I just think sausage rolls should be allowed to travel to France to, you know, take the joys of British culinary merits to the mainland.
You're very courageous, and part of me agrees with you. Part of me agrees with you. I'm not sure about your eat-a-thon, but you are the Joan of Arc of sausage rolls, I have to say. I just hope you don't live to regret it, or die, in fact, to regret it. Give me your basket, let's put a few things back.
Yeah, right, fair enough. And I'm going to do a really angry protest poem now by Percy Shelley, because he was very angry as well. A lot of Brexit and stupid customs rules. But
okay, well, you do that while I'm putting these caramels back.
England in 1819. An old, mad, blind, despised, and dying king. Princes, the dregs of their dull race who flow through public scorn, mud from a muddy spring. Rulers who neither see nor feel nor know, but leech-like to their fainting country cling till they drop blind in blood without a blow. A people starved and stabbed in the untilled field, an army whom liberticide and prey makes as a two-edged sword to all who wield golden and sanguine laws which tempt and slay. Religion Christless, godless, a book sealed, a senate, time's worst statute unrepealed, a graves from which a glorious phantom may burst to illumine our tempestuous day.
Oh, is he? Oh, God. Look, let's go over here by the railing, okay? For God's sake, I think. Stop, please stop. I think you've made your point.
I've just got too much caramel still.
No, don't eat any more, please. Breathe. Take deep, deep breaths.
I'm not pregnant. I mean, I feel a bit pregnant, but I just got that one more caramel.
Oh, don't eat it, please.
I'm feeling a bit sick. I'm just going to go over.
Not over the side, please. We're still in port. Oh, God. Quick, here's an emergency poem. Kent. French kissing French soil, but not quite. Kent. The hand of friendship amputated at the wrist. A case of the camel's nose under the tent. Kent. Phantom limb where there was once connecting flesh.
Oh, well, that's better.
Are you feeling better now?
I made my point, mostly to myself.
And to P&O Ferries as well, I think. Shall we? Come on. Come and sit down over here. Get some fresh air, okay? Mm-hmm. Take a load off. We'll get a nice view of the white cliffs as we leave the port. Oh, this is a nice spot, actually. Get a bit of the sun.
Yeah.
This brings back some nice memories, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah. How many times have you done this crossing?
A lot. A lot. This must be at least my 20th or 25th time doing this. Yeah. It's always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's always interesting, yeah. I've done some overnighters, you know, when I first moved to Germany. I used to drive through the night from Dusseldorf to get back to the UK to do a few jobs in London, for example. The only people that were with me on the ferry were lorry drivers, usually from Poland or East Europe. So I felt like a lorry driver, you know, drinking a lot of coffee. British breakfast, like the one we just had. Yeah. How about you?
My parents and I used to go on holidays and we always took the ferry. Actually, one time our car broke, but fortunately it was on the way back. But we drove off the ferry and then there was a sort of sound and then the car wouldn't start again. The axle. In the front.
Well, thank God it happened there and not on the motorway, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Were you overloaded with Marmite? Is that why it broke?
That's probably what happened. Got too many sausage rolls. Back in
too
the days
many sausage rolls.
When we were allowed to take all the sausage rolls.
Those were the days, yeah. Or you were overladen with olives stuffed with fish.
Yeah. My favourite.
I bet. Yeah. Ah, look, the sun's coming out.
Oh, that's really nice. Actually, I read a really cool long poem, because we had the brink, which is a really nice long poem. I wrote one by, and you're going to hate this, an American poet.
I thought we were going to have no American poetry
this episode. She wrote a long poem about sort of the main character of the poem is an American woman who moves to the UK.
Okay.
Well, she goes there on holidays, but then she falls in love
with
a British man. And it's right. It's really interesting because it talks a lot about sort of the outsider's perspective of the UK.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
And also, you know, experiences of racism, well, if you want to call it that, but, you know, of animosity against her because she's American.
Is it like the modern-day version of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner? Is it that long?
It is pretty long, yeah.
Are you going to? Am I going to have to play your role and shorten your participation?
I mean, I would be happy to do the entire thing, but I figured it might be a bit too long for our journey.
Well, now
but,
we're looking at the White Cliffs. Let's hear it, yeah.
Yeah, there's one poem which describes exactly that.
Okay.
It's the arrival in England on a sunny day.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Yeah. Alastair Miller, The White Cliffs. When the sun shines on England, it atones for low-hung leaden skies and rain and dim, moist fogs that paint the verdure on the stones and fill her gentle rivers to the brim. When the sun shines on England, shafts of light fall on far towers and hills and dark old trees and hedge-bound meadows of a green as bright as is the blue of tropic seas. When the sun shines, it is as if the face of some proud man relaxed his haughty stare and smiled upon us with a sudden grace, flattering because its coming is so rare.
I'm feeling strangely emotional after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't tell me you're going to be sick as well. I recommend the other side of the boat.
No, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Well, yeah, you know, it's the end of our journey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. Last episode. And it's been quite a journey, right?
It certainly has.
The pub feels like such a long time ago.
We were in a pub, weren't we?
Yeah.
My God, yeah, it really does. And what else have we done? So we've been on a train. We met
Rowan McCabe, the door-to-door salesman. Travelling poet.
Travelling poet, that's right. The door-to-door poet. And then, yeah... Made fire with Matt.
Morecambe. Matt
in Morecambe. Yeah.
Matt
yeah.
dropped us off somewhere in the Peak District.
Yeah, my back still hasn't recovered from that.
Yeah.
And got hopelessly lost and ran away from
werewolves. And also very odd characters that we met.
They were
the
a bit they strange, weren't they?
Friendly, but slightly unsettling. Yeah.
Pretty though it was, and even though we didn't have any Bakewell pudding, I was quite glad to leave there. Mm. On your back... Yeah,
my back hasn't
much
recovered from
than
that,
you
so, yeah.
Your back hasn't recovered either, so we're returning to Germany as cripples. We've crippled each other.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
and then that whole lunchbox shenanigans.
I think the less said about the fifth episode, the better.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Nothing happened there.
Yeah, so we will go no more a-roving. Mm-hmm. Actually, now, there we are. Now, we've had Keats. We also can't leave these shores without having another quintessentially British poet. And I say quintessentially British because he also was a great Europhile.
Mm.
He travelled a huge amount in Europe. He was quite the poet, but also quite the man. So our listeners will not be surprised when I announce that it is, of course, Lord George Gordon Byron. And the poem I'm going to read is So We'll Go No More A-Roving. So we'll go no more a-roving. So late into the night, though the heart be still as loving and the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath and the soul wears out the breast and the heart must pause to breathe and love itself have rest. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
I mean, yeah, Byron was really pro-European, wasn't he?
He was a real Europhile. I mean, he spent a lot of time travelling around. Mm. But have we, I mean, speaking of Britain, though, I mean, have we really, now that we're at the end of our little odyssey, have we really captured the essence of it? I mean, that's what we set out to do.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the listener really has to decide that. But there's so many facets of British culture and history and literature.
Yeah, we've scratched the surface, haven't we?
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I guess we'll both be back, right?
We'll be back, probably, but will there be a Britain to come back to, is the question.
I mean, it'll be all right. It's been all right for so many years. Hundreds, thousands of years.
Well, if there's one true thing in history, there's change, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess it'd be nice to get home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I must say, though, I always, when I'm in this position, because the ferry hasn't left yet and the engines haven't started and I can hear the seagulls and I don't know, part of me belongs here. I always feel a bit split in half at moments like this.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are ready for departure. Please remember not to bring animal or dairy products into the EU. Olives stuffed with fish and powdered baby milk are strictly permissible. Enjoy your crossing.
Those seagulls following us. Kent really does look resplendent from here.
It looks lovely, doesn't it? We're just going past the breakwaters now of Dover Harbour. Look up there. Do you see the lighthouse?
Ooh, yeah.
And the I think that's an observatory.
Yeah.
Kent, its megaphone raised to its lips, its spur drawing blood from the channel's flank. Kent. Kent, exposing its fat little cock to the east. Kent, where the country looks over the edge, waits on the brink. God, I'm tired. Oh, I haven't slept enough. I feel like those lorry drivers over there.
Well, it must be a familiar feeling for you, right?
Yeah, certainly is. It's funny to think, isn't it? It's funny to think how many people have looked at this site over the last two millennia.
I feel a poem coming on.
Another one?
Yeah, maybe just something sort of short and poignant.
Short and poignant. What have you got in mind, Izzy?
I think one that is really obvious would be John Donne's.
John Donne, of course. John Donne, we haven't had him either on our show.
Should we do that one together?
Yeah, why don't we do that? I mean, I'm feeling a little bit tired, but I think I've got energy enough for John Donne. Definitely.
No man is an island entire of itself. Every man
is a piece of the continent, a part of the main.
If a clot be washed away by the sea, Europe
is the less, as well as if a promontory were,
as well as any manner of thy friends,
or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me,
because I am involved in mankind.
And therefore never send to know for whom
the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. I mean, I feel in a way that really sums up our little journey, right? Because the idea of death, of parting, and, you know, I am involved in mankind, whatever happens to Britain, I feel like we both will always be involved in that because of our many connections there, and the friends we have and we've made. You know what, Orlando? I feel like, you remember in the very beginning at the pub, you started sort of doing John of Gaunt's speech, Richard II, and, you know, I interrupted and said, well, it's kind of old-fashioned, blah, blah, blah. But I feel now would really be the moment, I think. I'd really love to hear you perform it. I think that would be very fitting. What do you think? Oh well, maybe next time then.
This show was recorded at a social distance and according to COVID guidelines.